You cannot be a Viksit Bharat and all that without half the country participating in that equally.
Absolutely.
In all opportunities,
absolutely.
Right?
I mean, agar aurte nahi hogi viksit to fir kya viksit desh hoga? Nobody likes hearing it, but marriage is the biggest reason. I mean, all the data seems to show that marriage is what just kicks women out of the workforce and men hold on to jobs. And Mukesh, I think the one thing I do want to tell you is, you know, now when I think back, we were lucky because I do think that it's physically not safe actually to be doing, as a woman, to do research in many of these places. Whenever you have a mother-in-law who is working, suddenly you see the likelihood of the woman in the house also having a job just goes up tremendously. The mother wanted to marry Shah Rukh and the daughter wants to become Shah Rukh.
Shreyana, welcome.
Thank you, Mukesh. It's such a pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking forward to this conversation. I got to know about your work through your book, Desperately Seeking Shah Rukh Khan. Shah Rukh, not Khan, in the book title. The title, you know, catches your attention. It's a very creative name.
Thank you.
And when I just saw the cover, obviously makes you wonder, you know, what is this book about? Is it about Shah Rukh? Is it about what he means to the country and so on?
Yeah.
But as going through the book, I realized that you almost use Shah Rukh as a creative device to bring about some, you know, deeper insight about Indian society, and that to not only particular section, but women at large, from really elite professional women to women in rural India and who are really underprivileged and trying to figure out how to make their mark in the world.
Yeah.
How did this insight came to you, which culminated into calling this book, first of all, you know, Desperately Seeking Shah Rukh?
So first, Mukesh, I have to really thank you, because you must be one of the very few Indian men who has read the book. And the reason I say this, actually, before I tell you about the story of the book is, you know, it's fascinating to me because I think it says Desperately Seeking Shah Rukh, and the tagline is India's Lonely Young Women. And I think some combination of Shah Rukh Khan, the loneliness of women, kitab ke upar ek Nobel laureate ka endorsement bhi hai, but I notice that people never look at that. I think they immediately think that ladki ne likhi hai, it's about Shah Rukh and about women, it's chick lit. And as you now know, as you're going through the book, it's you know,
far from it.
Yeah.
You pause and think about.
And to be honest, I quite love chick lit. I think that's, you know, I don't even know what that means. I think anytime women write in their own voices, we come up with new ways to dismiss it. So we call it chick lit. So this is economics chick lit. I'm happy to own that category. But, you know, the impetus of the book actually comes from this place as well, Mukesh. You know, sometime in 2006, I just finished my master's in economics. And Hamid sikhaya gaya tha ki survey kaise karna hai. And mujhe survey karna bahut pasand aata hai. I also love talking to people. I love doing interviews, so on and so forth. And they teach you these very simple techniques, right? You ask people about basic numeric data you're trying to collect. At that time, I was in my early 20s, much younger than I am now. And I remember being sent to an area called Bapunagar in Gujarat, in Ahmedabad, where a lot of women at that time, and still actually, make garments or incense sticks at home, which is earning about a quarter of minimum wage. You know, this is really our precariat. These were all women who were part of Seva, which is one of the world's largest labor unions. And we were just supposed to do a simple survey and, you know, just simple questions. How many hours do you work? How much money are you making? Mm-hmm. Tell us about your labor conditions. And I went with my questionnaire. I was very excited. And I realized when I went to the field, Mukesh, everybody looked so bored. Mm-hmm. Nobody wanted to answer these same questions. They used to call me survey wali didi. And they used to tell me that all you Malayali and Bengali ladies come with kajal in your eyes and your khadi kurta and your jhola, and you ask us the same questions or kuch nahi badalta. So what is fayda kya hai? Why should we even talk to you? And I realized that the traditional way of doing the survey was not working. So I started using icebreakers. You know, they teach you this in marketing or any kind of research. So I started asking all these women, who's your favorite actor? And suddenly, in this slum in Ahmedabad, I met all these women who were mad Shah Rukh Khan fans. Yeah. And that really surprised me, because tab tak to hume bataya gaya tha ki his fans are largely NRIs, elite Indians or urban Indians. But, you know, to see this very different demographic love him so much was very interesting. And then when I started asking these women, you know, why do you like him? What did you watch? Kaun si picture pasand hai? Things like that. I realized that the energy of the conversation, Mukesh, just completely changed. And it's true, I think between you and me, you know, if I start asking you about your taxes, you'll be fairly bored and may not want to talk to me. Exactly. You're saying don't talk. Exactly. You'll end the conversation. But if I ask you about something you enjoy doing, you'd be much more open to talking to me, right? And this is true for anyone. And I was very tired of this kind of research, Joe, you know, you go and you're very privileged and then you go ask people who don't have the same amount of power as you. You bore them with your, you know, questions. So I thought, let's do things differently. And the thing that I realized when they were talking about Shah Rukh Khan is they were not talking about him as a celebrity, as you now see in the book. Yeah. They were talking about their struggles to find free time to watch him, to find the money and the purchasing power and the economic freedom to access markets, right? To be able to just watch a simple film, have a mobile phone. And I realized, you know, in economics, we try and measure economic agency and purchasing power of different people in different ways. You know, can you buy a book? Can you buy a t-shirt? I decided, why don't I ask all these women, can you buy a ticket to watch your favorite actor? And that's Shah Rukh Khan. And it became a very unusual way for us to then get into these conversations about markets, economy, women's economic freedom, masculinity, and men as well. But to make it more enjoyable, you know, not to make it the same sort of stuffy, boring way of doing research. And that's where the idea came from. I use the same question and same technique, who is your favorite actor? From the slums of Ahmedabad to the forests of Jharkhand, villages of UP, you see it in the book. And I stitched together over 15 years this vast and very different set of women. We're a fan club together. And the two things that we have in common is we love Shah Rukh Khan, but more importantly, we want to watch him on our own dime. You know, we don't want to rely on boyfriends, husbands, fathers to be able to do something as simple as watch our favorite actor. And that's how the idea of the book
came. What is very interesting about, you know, reading this book is, while, you know, as you, I think, narrated through lots of different stories, that there is this common love for Shah Rukh Khan in the country because of the characters he has portrayed and the image of a, I guess, desirable Indian man that he has cultivated. But what, you know, that's one theme, you know, through all the stories. But other theme is, you have very interestingly, you know, use like their relationship with Shah Rukh, how they perceive, to depict their life stories.
Yeah.
The struggle, as well as struggle, aspirations, challenges for all these women, you know, throughout the length and breadth of the country, very different economic and social status. Yep. So some level, you know, Shah Rukh is common across all of them.
Yes.
Yet they have such different life stories. So that, was it obvious to you to kind of weave it in this way?
No, not at all. I have to be very honest with you. This book is just, you know, when you follow a happy accident and you follow your instinct. I'm sure we've all had moments like that, right? Be it in creative pursuits, businesses. I just knew that there was something about the energy of these conversations, Mukesh, that I wanted to follow. And I knew that there was something about him. He is not just a celebrity, you know. He's a universe in him of language. Yeah. Because if you see in the book, nobody has one Shah Rukh Khan in mind. Everybody's created this different idea of him. So for someone, he is the fact that if you come from a family that does not have networks and connections, you can still do well and become, you know, a superstar. So through them, he is a question of, you know, network effects in the economy and social capital and that whole nepotism thing that, you know, people talk about.
Yeah.
For other people, he is just sexiness and good looks and what does a city man look like. For somebody else, it's a story about migration. You know, for some women in the book, he's not an actor. He's almost a self-help guru. You know, they rely on his interviews to get guidance on how to deal with their own life. And I realized that there was such an energy and excitement and enthusiasm to talk about him, but not talk about him. But actually, if you realize and you see this in the book, they're talking about themselves and they're using him as language to talk about themselves. And I've always been very interested in, I find myself very boring. I'm very interested in other people. And I just knew that if I could just let other people tell me about themselves, it might land somewhere. I had no idea that it would look the way it does finally in the text. That took a lot of hard work 3 years after all the material had been done. But Mukesh, the method I used for the book, you know, we call it longitudinal research. So you follow the same people over a long period of time. So there's a set of 10 families, 10 women, essentially, who I follow for 15 years in the book, and it's their stories. And it's very common for this kind of nonfiction to be written in America or China or Latin America. India mein itna zyada hum karte nahi hai, I think, because it's difficult to do and who will give you research financing. But I kept doing this on the side thinking, I wasn't sure whether it was going to be a book, but I knew it had something in it, you know, it would become something. Finally, sometime in 2015-16, when I sort of sat back, and so I've been doing this from 2006 to 2016, and I ended up finishing the research only in 2019. In that period, I realized, let me take stock of what I had, and that's when the structure of the book became apparent to me. It was actually at that point, Mukesh, that I realized that I didn't want the book just to be about poor women. I wanted to open it up. I decided to write about myself, and I'm quite transparent about that in the book. So at that point, I think it became more cross-class, but it wasn't evident to me from the beginning. What was evident to me was there was something very interesting about how women talk about him and use him to talk about themselves. And I just wanted to follow that.
I think your style of writing, I think, was quite impressive. It's very, very unique. Like, you weave in some autobiographical things, your own experience in life. You know, they are interspersed, you know, through the stories. The story of each of these women, I think you've told them really well. So you start to, almost some point, it starts to read like a novel. That you feel like you are reading about interesting characters. There's a plot development.
Yeah.
And then you realize you're also commenting on the larger social, political structure of the country. So it's a pretty unique level of genre-defying book in that sense. Is that kind of feedback you've got also since the publication?
Well, I mean, it's been very generous. And the reviews said some of what you've been saying. I think for me, the real trick, honestly, and I have to really credit, my agent is Shruti Debi, and she was really the person who initially read the draft, and my editor was Shaugat Dasgupta. And one thing the two of them told me, and this is something I think is advice that I don't know why we don't give each other more often, which is, they just said, you write what you feel, you know, don't try and write to impress economists or impress businessmen or impress important people in nonfiction reading, you know, because sometimes you play to the market, right? And they said, you don't do that. You just do what sits right to you because you know these women, you know the story. And somehow I think because I was a first-time writer, there was no baggage. I don't come from a creative writing training program. Mujhe kisi ne sikhaya nahi baithke ki kaise likhte hain. I did it on my own. And that gives you freedom, right? You can just then experiment, play around, do different things. And I think it is that freedom and then that confidence that these two people who are very central to the book gave me to say, you can do this that way. And I think the other thing that was very important to me when I was writing this is that I, you know, in my day job, I'm an economist. I work for a large institution. I deal with the technocracy and the policy world a lot. And I knew how the policy world writes about women's lives. And it's very important work. Exactly. And I knew that, you know, I did not want to go down that path. And it's a literature I respect a lot. I'm part of that community. I think it's so valuable. But I felt like there was a loneliness. There were all these other stories behind the numbers that those reports and that kind of writing can never tell you. And I wanted to go in that direction. And so sometimes I think, I often feel it was like my rebellion to my day job was actually what this book is. And maybe that's how it happened.
Are you able to do your day reports also in this style of writing?
No, not at all. No, my day reports are, as you know, there's a very clear format in which I think all bureaucracies write. And I work for a large bureaucracy and development bureaucracy as well. And you follow the rules to be legible. But to be honest, I'm very grateful for that because when, you know, when you're trained, I think it's the way people probably talk about engineering or something, you know, when you're trained in a very sort of, there's a linear way things are supposed to work. Then once you know it very well, you can experiment after you know that, you know, that way of work very well. So for me, it was that. I don't think, to be honest, I would have been able to write it in this style if I weren't in my day job writing the regular reports. So I think it's a balance.
Borrowed the structure from there and then... Obviously, a lot of storytelling here.
Yeah.
So you followed the lives of these women over 15 years.
Yes.
Was that the plan all along or somewhere along the way thought that, you know, it's worth it? It's not easy to do anything for 15 days these days. For 15 years. Now, one of the things in this podcast, you know, we keep talking, you know, compounding and you're putting in the effort, you know, the 10 years behind overnight success and all of that. This is a living example of that. You actually invested a decade and a half.
Yeah,
picking 10 women and just, you know, and they would have, I mean, you talk about it in the book, you know, these women would have grown, they have gone through lots of different stages of life, different life challenges, so on. And so when did you decide to follow them for such long? And you must have become pretty close to some of them.
Yes. And, you know, most important, Mukesh, you know, you can't do this kind of research. There are ethical rules around it, right? You can't do this kind of work without actually taking what you write and what you report back to the person. I mean, I had rules as a codes of conduct. And to be honest, I had never thought it would be 15 years. I thought it would be 5 years. And what I had done was the reports that I got back after 5 years, I was supposed to go back and just, many of them don't read English. They don't even read Hindi necessarily. I had to go and narrate to them what I was doing. And when I was doing that, I realized by the time I'd go back, their lives would become even more interesting and they'd have much more to say. And they would contribute because they did not like the way, for example, they were being represented in one paragraph or one piece of the story. And so as it became more and more interactive, almost because of the rules of the research, that's actually how 5 years ended up becoming 10 years. And then where 10 years became 15, honestly, I don't know. I think I got lost in the stories. My agent and I joke that there's a parallel universe in which I'm still following these women because I enjoyed listening to them so much. And yes, to me, you know, yes, it has my name up top. Apparently, this is a book I have authored. But to me, everybody who has played that role of sharing their tears, their life stories, you know, there are very personal stories in there. And obviously, we became very close because you don't share this. I think Shah Rukh helped because that fandom sort of brought us together. I think also the difficulties of being an independent woman in our society also brought us together across class, across social groups. Right. And so I think that really forged a bond.
That's amazing. You know, I wish there is a way to convert that into a prescriptive formula for people. But, you know, this ability to hone into your instinct and somehow also trust it and to pursue and follow it. I think often, you know, great things happen. In your case, you know, culminated into, I think book is one milestone, but also it's probably captured the story of the Indian women of last two decades in a very, very interesting manner.
Thank you.
That itself is a milestone, you know, that came out of that 15 years of effort. But yeah, that's something, you know, listener of the podcast can think about, you know, just we don't have to chase the next big thing.
Yes.
Or the fad or how do I make it big in 3 years, right? You know, quality comes from this kind of commitment to your instinct. And
you know, I have to say, I now tell everybody, I go to so many book events and people ask me, what do you like? Tell us about, you know. And I see these young people and, you know, very well-intentioned, hardworking young people who want to write books in 6 months or a year. And maybe, you know, you probably are super talented, certainly more talented than me, and you can do it. But I always say anything short of 10 is not good enough for me when it comes to nonfiction. Because I feel like you need to, you know, think about it. I'm interviewing you. I met you for the first time. You can say something to me and then that'll be, it can be very superficial as well, right? To really dig deep, you need to really know an area. And that takes time. It could be different for different people in terms of time horizons. So for me, I'm a very big believer in this sort of consistent, I call it slow literature, you know, sort of going back, doing things a bit slowly. I do think I'm able to do it because I have a regular job. So this is not where my income comes from. So that's a very important part, right? And also, I think the reason I was able to do it was because I just really loved these stories. And the last thing, on a funny note, I will add, I think what really also helped was I had some very bad boyfriends in the middle. And, you know, I was trying to sort of avoid dealing with like the romantic turmoil in my life, which I'm quite open about in the book. And so I've always found that when you don't want to obsess about yourself, you dive into other people's lives, right? So the book, I think, is also partly, it was my defense and coping mechanism because I didn't want to deal with some things that were going on in my life. So I thought might as well look for guidance in the lives of others. And that's basically what I did.
That's a very powerful tool right there, you know. If you have something in your life you're not able to cope with, take immense interest in other people's lives.
Yes.
And, you know, and to be honest, you know, everybody's lives are interesting, you know. We don't need to obsess too much about, you know, what a little drama that all of us, you know, go
through. Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, I also often say, especially when it comes to these stories about women, too often I find that the kinds of stories that get a lot of footage, right, in our media, in our culture, they either tend to be occasional stories of the big heroes, so CEOs, and that's wonderful. I mean, you know, women in leadership, you know, all of that, or sports stars and achievers, right? Achievers in a very obvious way. Or you have stories about victims of brutal crimes. Yeah. And I feel, you know, to your point that actually I feel there's a missing middle of the narrative, at least when it came to women's lives, about all the women who are in the middle. You know, they're not heroes in that sense. They're not victims in any sense. They're negotiating. They just want to be independent. And I really was interested in that everyday story as opposed to the story on the more exciting margins, perhaps. And so that's, I echo that idea that everybody's stories are interesting. And I think everyone is a philosopher. Everybody wants to tell their own story as well.
Of course. And it's fun to be able to tell your story. Speaking of that, what are some of the stories in the book, you know, that, I mean, you spent 15 years with all of them, so I'm sure all of them are near and dear to you, but which are, you know, either stories of significant transformation you have seen someone make, or perhaps even for heartbreak, you know, that over 15 years, you know?
Yeah.
What are the emotional contours of some of the intros that, stories that
you saw? So I have not cry, so I want to do this properly. But, you know, it actually makes me very emotional when I think about this, because I have a line in the book, and it sounds very simple, but it's actually very powerful. There are lots of mother-daughter pairs in the book. You would have seen it. You know, for example, there's a young woman in Ahmedabad. She was extremely young and she had a daughter. And I actually saw the daughter become an adult because, you know, she was 10 years old or something when I met her. And by the time the book finishes, she's in her early 20s. And what's interesting is I say about them and some other mother-daughter pairs that the mother wanted to marry Shahrukh and the daughter wants to become Shahrukh. And what I mean by that, Mukesh, is that for the mother, this idea that you'll have this handsome husband who'll take care of you and you don't, and you know, this idea that maybe I won't need to work, I'll be taken care of, you know, there'll be someone loving in the house, I'll have the protections, right, of a man. That is seen as something that they really wanted. But if you see the daughters that they have produced through their hard work, and this particular mother-daughter pair, the daughter's called Meenal. And what's interesting is that Meenal will not marry. Now, she's a single woman. She's now a surveyor in Bombay. And her mother's desperate for her to get married. But Meenal wants to be Shahrukh. And what I mean by that is she doesn't want to be a star. She just wants her own money. She wants her own house. She wants her own phone. Yeah. She wants her own life. She wants to be as respected and loved as he is. And for her, that is most important. And then love she will find on her own, right? And I think there are lots of these stories of intergenerational change between grandmothers, mothers, daughters, and mothers and daughters in the book, which have really moved me. And I feel like it has been the privilege of my life has been to be able to just witness them and document them. And the other part that I do think that sometimes breaks my heart a lot is there are lots of women in the book who are, you know, and I think this will resonate with you, you know, sort of the first generation in their families to really do something very different from what the family has traditionally done, right? And for example, in the book, there's a young woman who ends up becoming an accounts officer in the Delhi government. Yeah. And she's the first, I mean, it's a government job, and you and I both know what a government job means in our country. It's a big deal. And yet she finds that no one in her immediate circle is interested in celebrating her job. They are much more interested in when will you get married, shadi kab karogi, kab hoga, bachcha kab hoga, all of that. She's not interested in getting married. You know, she, when I asked, because I asked all the women in the book, you could pick your own pseudonym. And everybody usually picked a name. And in fact, there are some, I actually explain why some of the names have been selected by these women. Some of the stories are very beautiful. But she called herself the accountant because she was so proud of the fact that she'd studied accounts, that she was working in the account service. There was a deep sense of pride in her professional identity. And I think for her, the fact that no one who she really loved, you know, she loves her parents, she loves her cousins, nobody really cares about her job, was very heartbreaking and very lonely making. And that's why she loves Shahrukh. You know, I asked her, when do you watch him? And she told me, I watch him when I realize no one is valuing the struggles of my everyday office life. And she'd see her cousin brothers, for example, who don't even have jobs as prestigious as her, whatever. Mm-hmm. But people are very interested in their promotions, how they are doing in the workfare, in the workspace. And that loneliness, and, you know, in economics, we call it an emotional tax, this idea that if you don't conform to traditional ways of behavior, people will tax you. But in case they may not tax you in money, they'll tax you in feelings. They'll make you feel second-guessed, lonely, your self-esteem may be, you know, sort of diminished. And seeing that was very heartbreaking. And yet she is still on her own. And I won't give it away for those who haven't read the book, but she negotiates an equilibrium eventually around that. And I think seeing all these everyday struggles, really, as I said earlier, it's been the privilege of my life. And I hope for whatever I write next, I want to tell those kinds of stories, which I think will, I hope will resonate with people. Because I think, to your earlier point as well, I mean, not only is everyone's life interesting, I think everyone's dealing with these struggles. And I think if we were a little bit more honest about them, I think we'd be a healthier society.
It's great to have these stories, you know, have the central stage. I also, you know, I'm a big nonfiction reader. And what I like about a nonfiction that I've been consuming the last 20 years, you know, nonfiction has changed now. A lot of really good nonfiction authors, they basically write nonfiction almost like fiction.
Yeah.
There are a lot of real world stories.
Yeah.
Stories told so when you get hooked into the story and then, and I think that's why, you know, you have done an incredible job of, you know, mostly telling the story of this, you know, real world people in such a, you know, relatable manner.
Yeah.
I hope, you know, more and more, I think such stories and this kind of nonfiction comes out. I think to your earlier point about the story about India, I mean, there's 1.4 billion people, which means there's so much diversity. Half of them are women with, again, so much, you know, different backgrounds, different, you know, struggles and so on. So I hope a lot more aspiring writers, you know, get inspired to pursue some of these leads and, you know, dug out these stories that, you know, the more we are talking about, versus talking about just very few names, you know, continues in the media and same stories, they get really boring and after a time.
I know, and we won't name names, but I completely share your frustration. But the other thing, though, I do want to say, and here I think that, you know, people like you, I think at some point will certainly have to play a role, which is, you know, we can tell all these stories, but the problem also is those doing the research to actually tell the stories, there is a real chronic lack of resources available, right, to encourage this. So, for example, you know, what I was saying to you earlier, this longitudinal style of collecting data that you say, okay, one family, I'll follow them for 10 years, 20 years. Some of the best sociologists in America have produced work, Mukesh, which is actually just this. They were given grant funding or research funding. There were certain outcomes that were agreed on. But their work was actually following different families. You know, one of my favorite books in sociology is a book called Shoots and Ladders. And essentially, it's about an American sociologist who follows these families and workers who are working in McDonald's and sort of fast food shops. And she follows their trajectories, you know, and it's shoots and ladders because the idea is they become economically mobile sometimes and then things collapse. And I really wish, you know, for that kind of research, we also need an ecosystem that will support that kind of work, right? Because I could do it, as we said, you know, my job was subsidizing the research in a way. I don't know how possible that is, especially for people who really are living, for example, in Bapunagar and who should be actually telling the stories. So I'm also hoping that, you know, with these kinds of books and this kind of nonfiction writing, the support base as well to encourage these stories also grows and mushrooms. And let's hope then we'll get a real diversity, you know.
Yes,
that'll be exciting.
Hope so.
Yeah.
How was your experience in just, you know, visiting these families? Because they were, you know, some of them are in very remote parts of the country. So, unke saath unke ghar mein rehte the, like,
Ji.
You know, same khana khate the. Like, just describe that experience. Ki, kaisa lagta tha ki, you know, you come from reasonable, you know, privilege.
Yes, of course, yeah.
And then the contrast of, you know, the places where these people stay, just, you know, absorbing that.
Yeah.
And not making them uncomfortable also. In the whole process. You know.
So I'm not sure how much I was, how comfortable they were really with me. But I think eventually, and this is to the point of, you know, things take time. I think it took some time and then people become comfortable because you also get into a certain rhythm.
Family ban gaye.
For some, for sure. And then others treated me as a bit of a nuisance. Ki, matlab, but they were curious. You know, actually the thing that we don't realize, I should ever tell you this. Jitna, aap sochte hain ki these women were my research subjects. But for these women, I was their research subject. And what I mean by that is, each time I'd go, the main thing they wanted to ask me was, tumhari shaadi hui ki nahi? And ab kitab bhi aa gayi hai, aur kitab Shah Rukh Khan sir ke paas bhi pahunchi, abhi bhi wo puchhengi mujhse, acha theek hai, Shah Rukh Khan se to mil liye, aapki shaadi kab ho rahi hai? They are still, you know, and their curiosity also about my life, about what's happening in my job. And so it was always, and I think that's actually why the book is written in a somewhat conversational style, because it was always a conversation. And you know this, you go anywhere in India, people feel very free to ask you very personal questions. You know, it's not really a society where people are shy about asking you things. And they would ask me. And I think, in, you know, to your question about field work, I think the place where it became the most difficult It's a story actually I didn't mention in the book. It was earlier in the draft, but we removed it because we wanted to sort of, it was becoming too long. Ek jagah Rampur jahan pe main research kar rahi thi. The interesting thing was that we show up to Rampur and pehle wahan pe ek hotel tha jahan pe hum ruke hue the, and as you can imagine, a hotel there, it wasn't particularly safe. The first day when we arrived, aur hum, mujhe bataya gaya tha, ye hum project ke saath gaye the pehle, even before I was going to do the actual research for the book. Because again, as I told you in the beginning, I met all these women through these original research projects. So jab hum project ke liye gaye, main thi aur ek aur hamari research assistant thi. जब हम पहुंचे हमें बताया गया कि यहाँ पे कोई पॉलिटिशियन आ रहे हैं, विल बी नेमलेस, और उनका वहाँ पे कुछ मतलब उद्घाटन होने वाला था, कुछ ना कुछ हो रहा है, और आप जानते हैं उत्तर प्रदेश में उद्घाटन एंड हाँ एंड उद्घाटन होने वाला है. तो हमें पुलिसमैन हु वाज सपोज टू प्रोटेक्ट द पॉलिटिशियन टोल्ड मी कि आप ना यहाँ पे ना रहें आज, आप गाँव चले जाएँ क्योंकि गाँव द विलेज विल बी सेफर फॉर यू देन बीइंग हियर. And Mukesh, I think the one thing I don't want to tell you is, you know, now when I think back, we were lucky because I do think that it's physically not safe actually to be doing, as a woman, to do research in many of these places. So that's one point. So Gaon actually, and unka ghar, I mean, the homes of many of our respondents were the safest places to be, which is actually also what helped the research. So it's a strange thing that actually the lack of physical safety helped the research process in some strange way. But the other part that I want to tell you is that Jharkhand mein, wahan pe hum gaon mein ruke hue the because the area was so remote you couldn't stay. I was living earlier in a place in Sahibganj. And wahan pe bhi, I remember, hum pehle ek raat ek motel mein ruke hue the, and then agle din we were going to take the bus to the village. And wahi mera routine yahi tha. And wahan pe ek janab the jo matlab motel ka, matlab he was the caretaker. And he basically used to tell me ki aap na veranda mein mat aana. And this actually I mentioned in the book. Because he said that if you come out on the veranda, people will apparently get mixed signals or something and there'll be an issue. So you please, you stay in the room, lock the door, and I'll make sure that nobody knows you're here. And so honestly, Mukesh, for me, going to the village or what you're calling, you know, the interiors was actually the safest space. I'm not the only one, by the way, who says this. Agar aap kisi aurat se bhi poochhein jo research karti hain, wo yehi aapko batayengi ki gaon mein zyada safety hoti hai relative to even sort of, you know, peri-urban areas where you're really not sure about safety. So that's an important issue. And when I was there, I think the strangest thing that I just remember is the number of questions that people used to ask me about my height, my parents, my friends, you know, ye dikhao, wo dikhao. And so I'm certain, I think to that point that I was making earlier, that if somebody had funding and language to write, there would be somebody in actually where I was doing research in Jharkhand writing a book about, you know, this random girl who came from Delhi and who was doing this research and what all of that meant. So it was a very, I think it was an interesting time. It was an exciting time, but it very interactive. And, you know, so to me, I think the issue around safety, the issue around actually the researcher becoming the research subject, those are important. And ek to hamari respondent bilkul gum ho gayi thi, wo to lapata ho gayi. And I mentioned this in the book. She's called Manju in the book. There's a reason she's called Manju. She's taken the name Manju. I won't give it away. People have to read the book. She disappeared. I was following her and then no one in her family knew where she was. And it took some time. And again, I won't give it away. And I think for people who reach the chapter on her, what happened to Manju is a very exciting story. So it was a very strange, heady time doing the research because log gum ho rahe hain, fir log wapas aa rahe hain.
Aapne isme thriller bhi dal diya, mystery thriller, log
gayab ho rahe hain. Thriller, but you know what, it was a very strange thing because I remember the brothers were calling me. She had brothers. They'd call me and say, wo aapke yahan hain, kahan hain? And
researcher ne kidnap kar
liya. Yeah, exactly. What's going on? And it was, I learned a lot. I learned a lot about just, I think, fundamentally how difficult mobility can be just for women. As a researcher, the people I was researching, all of that. I think things have changed. I hope things are getting better. But it still remains a huge challenge.
And Shreyana, one of the issues that I think you talked about talk in the book, and a lot of your work is also, you know, related to that at different stages, is this whole idea of women's participation in the workforce. In fact, you have some stats in the end, which I really liked. You know, been looking for that. I'll just quickly go to Anikshar. And so the women participation on rural women has come down from 33% to 18% over three-decade period.
Yes.
4 decades, 77 to 2017, 18. Similarly, in urban, it's kind of flattish, but very low.
Yeah.
17-18% at the time of emergency, you know.
Yes.
And 16% now.
Yes.
This is mind-boggling, very hard to believe.
So, Mukesh, a couple of things. This data was up till 2018-19.
That's right.
There have been updates. Yeah. And I think we should talk about that, as it's an important thing. So, now where we are, if you look at rural... Abhi, the government just released its periodic labor force survey. And it's a solid survey. They ask the same sets of questions, so it's comparable over time. So that's very important, right, for everyone to know that it's not someone else's data. Kabhi-kabhi main kitabu ki event mein jaati hun, log mujhse puchte hain, ye toh aapka data hai. And we didn't mera data nahi, hum sabka data, ye sarkar ka data hai. And essentially what they find now, this is the 2022 report, is that rural male labor force participation for men above the age of 15 is about 80-81%. For women rural, it's become 41%. So there's actually a big jump that's happened since, in particular, between 2018 to 2022.
This big jump, is it because of methodology change or is like-to-like
comparison? No, it's like-to-like. It's a like-to-like.
41.
So it went from 18 to then around 20, 22, then it went to 41. However, Mukesh, what's very important, urban still remains. There's been a slight increase, but it still remains flat. So urban, for example... for men, again, above the age of 15, urban men, it's about 76-77%. For women, it still is about 24-25%. And that, I think, is a massive, you know, that's a massive gap. And what's most important, and we can talk a little bit about why you've seen this increase in rural areas, I'll come to that. But what's most important is if you look at women and men who have postgraduate degrees, and we know from the data, Mukesh, that usually if you have a postgraduate degree, you will be working or you'll be looking for a job. If you look at women and men with postgraduate degrees, we're still, I mean, I think for men, it would be at least 87-86% are in the labor force, are working. For women, it still comes up to be around 40-50%. States like Delhi and Karnataka and others will be in the 50s and 40s. You even have states which have 31%, you know, women with postgraduate degrees. So I think while there's been an increase, I think what's very important for us to note is that the gap between male employment rates, female employment rates, particularly for those who are very educated, still remain extremely stark, right? Those gaps are very persistent. Now, as for that increase, what a lot of economists are now saying, looking at the data very closely, and this is COVID ka effect hai, because what people are saying is that this increase in rural areas is actually a sign of distress. Because what's happened is households need additional income.
Got it.
And so therefore, women are going out and working. And ye, actually, if you look at the economic literature, Mukesh, it really holds up. Because lots of economists, and I mentioned this in the book as well, often say that in rural areas in particular, women's work or jobs or income is seen as a flexible resource. Ki agar chahiye, then she'll go out and work. If we don't need it, she will be a caregiver at home. And you see this, you know, there's a wonderful paper by Professor Ashwini Deshpande. She's at Ashoka. And essentially what she finds is, along with her colleagues, that women are constantly going in and out of the labor force. Yeah. So that's an important thing. So there has been an increase. But what a lot of economists and what the data seems to suggest is, it's not that the increase is suddenly women are working a lot more in independent jobs. It's that the households need money. And a lot of that work, because the government survey also includes unpaid family labor as a category in working, because it's a very broad definition.
Include that as well.
Yes, it does. And that's actually that, along with self-employed women, you're seeing this increase. So there's this big debate about whether the increase is really good in from the perspective of the quality of employment. And I think, to your point, though, urban is still abysmal. I mean, we are not in a country where we should be at 24-25% women working.
I mean, aapke understanding hai, I mean, especially among the educated women.
Yeah.
Like, this is among the lowest, you know, employment rate among the urban educated women anywhere in the world.
Yes.
How to explain this, you know, to what's your understanding, and also where it is going? Is it changing? Is it not changing?
Yeah, that's a, okay. That's a, so a couple of things. I think it's, I'm very optimistic. I have to be. I'm very optimistic. Every conversation I have with any young woman anywhere, she wants to be independent. You know, recently, Claudia Golden won the Nobel Prize in economics. And the reason she won the prize is because she's done this beautiful history of what's happened to women in America in the labor market. And one of the things we learn actually from her is that what is most important when it comes to this change that you're talking about is not just the numbers. I mean, the numbers can go up and down. It also depends on the nature of the macroeconomy, COVID, crisis, all kinds of things. But what's very important is, do women think that a job is just something they need to do to help their family when things are hard? or is a job a core part of your personal identity? You know, do you think, like, to that point of the woman calling herself an accountant, right? The way you and I feel about our work, is that the way you feel about your work? And one of the things that Claudia Golden found was that what really ushered the revolution in America for women was not just sort of the increase in rates, but when young women started saying work is a very essential part of my identity, that it gives me freedom, that it gives me joy, and opens up connections, social life that is important to me. It helps me meet men that I might be interested in through different ways as opposed to the way my mother found a partner, right? And I see that all around me in urban India. Everywhere I go, from small towns to big cities, what gives me a lot of hope is that almost every young woman I meet, she may be very angry, she may be very frustrated, she may be upset because the job market is not working out for her. But to her, it is absolutely essential that I want to work to be my own person. And that, I think, is a sign, it is a signal of a shift. You're also seeing it in our politics, right? I mean, forget the recent reservation. You know, even without that, you see women voting much more and women's issues becoming very critical, right? Right from safety to other kinds of issues. You know, there was a huge outrage with the Restless protest as well. And it is a question also of working women. You know, these are working women, right? So I think it's becoming a political issue, women's economic rights, irrespective of whether you lean left, right, center, whatever. I think no one will look at this and say this is not a problem. So that gives me a lot of hope. And these stories from young women give me a lot of hope. Having said that, though, I think what's happening, I mean, to your question of why are we seeing these persistent gaps in urban areas? I mean, let's be honest, nobody likes hearing it, but marriage is the biggest reason. I mean, all the data seems to show that marriage is what just kicks women out of the workforce and men hold on to jobs. Because kahin mein na hamara abhi bhi wo social contract hai ki auraton ka kaam hai ghar sambhalna aur mardon ka kaam hai ghar se bahar income sambhalna. And I have this, I talk about it, which is that, you know, men deal with the economy outside and women deal with the economy inside. I think it's changing, but the shape of that hasn't really changed. And one very important asset to that is that we are not only, I think, right now the bottom five when it comes to women's economic freedoms in the world, as per the World Economic Forum report. We are also right now the bottom five when it comes to men helping in housework. And, you know, it is...
worth repeating. Can you... Bottom five in what?
Bottom five when it comes to men helping in housework. And that's we measure what? This.
Yeah, and the first one?
The first... Five? Bottom five as per the World Economic Forum report when it comes to women's economic opportunities and freedoms. And, you know, these are... Countries are ranked based on different metrics. It's a standard metric. We were in the bottom five. And we were in the bottom five as per the ILO when they were looking at, you know, countries and how much men... How many minutes per day do men spend in care work? Yeah. And I think if you combine marriage and care work, right, that's a big... I mean, basically, marriage and care is a primary job for many women. And I think till we don't shift that burden or till the government or the private sector doesn't come in to offer more options to women, I think you're going to continue to see that. So that's one. The second part of the story also is very honestly, there aren't enough jobs that actually will absorb women. Yeah. And, you know, this is something economists have been talking about a lot. Since the 1990s, Mukesh, if you look at the top 10 fastest growing sectors, only about 19% of jobs in those sectors have gone to women. So if you don't have, if you don't increase the pie, how will then the allocation of the pie change as well? Yeah. So I think there's one issue around marriage, care, the social norm story. The second is, where are the jobs going to come from? And can we be intentional in the way we create opportunities to privilege women in those jobs, right? And in that kind of job search. And the third, I think, which is very, very vital, I think we were talking about it earlier when we were discussing the research process, is, you know, the job market is not just the job market in vacuum. There are other markets linked to it. So, for example, I, with all my privileges, Mukesh, as a single woman, it's still so hard to find a house for yourself. The housing market is very, does not like single women. If you're a working woman, to find safe accommodation is really difficult. So if the job market is linked to these other markets as well, the market for credit, the market for financing, the market for housing, market for safe transport. So if we don't fix these ancillary infrastructure markets, how are we expecting, you know, women to start to get jobs more and more? Knowing very importantly that the nature of job growth in India, Mukesh, is such that you have to travel to get a job, right? You and I have had to move from cities to follow opportunity. India is not a country where jobs are available everywhere. So if you're going to tell young women that you need to travel to get a job, that travel has to be safe, housing has to be safe, the ancillary markets have to work. And so I think what you're seeing is a combination of these three or four things. But I'm still very hopeful. I think using that sort of framework of Professor Golden's to say that when I talk to women and I see it's such an important part of their planning, you know, for their own self-identity, that gives me a lot of hope. And I think things will change more and more as well.
I think a couple of things are coming to mind as I listen to it. One is, I mean, data seems pretty sobering.
Yeah.
But maybe a lot of people don't even know about that. I think you narrated a conversation with a historian where, you know, which typical of most people being in denial or explaining it away in a very superficial manner. So I think it's good that you are talking about it, you know, through your work. But probably more and people should just talk about that so there is general awareness. When you talk about, you know, this being India century and Viksit Bharat, we are talking about that before. You cannot be a Viksit Bharat and all that without half the country participating in that equally.
Absolutely.
In all opportunities.
Absolutely.
Right?
I mean, agar aurte nahi hogi viksit, toh fir kya viksit desh hoga? And then the more important thing to me actually is, and this is where I feel that men have to really step up and be equal allies in this. Yeah. Maaning nahi, how many times I go to book events and I talk about this. And there are men who get defensive. There are men who get angry because, and you know, this is not an attack. This is not going to be solved in isolation. It has to be solved together. And it is actually beneficial for both genders, right? And it's not a question of one versus the other. This is not a zero-sum game. Yeah. And I think we need to have more honest conversations about how are we feeling about the changing dynamics of gender in our society. And, you know, one thing I do want to, though, also add, one thing that complicates some of these numbers, but they are apples to apples comparisons, yes. But there is an underestimation. You know, you see this in the book that when you ask someone, do you work, a woman, she says, main kaam karti hu, meri naukri nahi hai. Right? And that's such an interesting dichotomy. And what she means is she's helping her family with the business that they have. It is work. But if somebody asked her, are you working? Although the statistical definition would count her as a worker, she won't report it as that. Or maybe the surveyor is not asking her. So there is an underestimation issue when it comes to women's work. But even with that, you know, that's generally distributed across all the survey rounds, you still see these deficits. And I do think, I mean, one, markets have to change and we have to be very intentional about the question of gender in the way opportunities are designed, distributed, and workplaces are designed and created. But men also have to, I think, you know, read Desperately Seeking Shah Rukh, read Claudia Golden, read Ashwini Deshpande's work, read Naila Kabir. I can give you a whole list of, you know, people whose work you should be reading. But I do think it's time that both, you know, this needs to be this is an alliance. This is not a conflict.
See, today in India is a juncture where there is a lot of confidence. I mean, we have seen this progress of the last two decades. Even just recently, you know, see, we used to lament about the state of infrastructure in the country.
Yes.
It has gone through, you know, leaps and bounds of improvement last 10 decades. Yeah. And I'm very optimistic about, you know, coming 5-10 years, right? How much it can improve. It's a matter of, you know, people really prioritizing. India Stack is another example of that. So I think the country today has the ability to do things. But if we ignore issues or, you know, just wish it away or explain that, you know, log karna hi nahi chahte, that kind of, you know.
Aurte kaam nahi karna chahti. This is the thing that I hear.
I think is going to really hold the country back. I mean, this is a very small podcast to reach far and wide. But I think if everybody from policymakers to opinion makers to both genders, unless they really talk about it, put the issue front and center.
Yeah.
That we need to have Viksit Bharat, you know, for both genders equally. And create, I mean, it's not an easy problem, obviously.
No.
But if only when you acknowledge and work on it in a concerted manner for a long period of time, then, you know, there is peace move.
But Mukesh, you know, there's one part of this which is very important. So, Meri Agli Kitab, I was telling you about
Go
it.
Go to ask the word.
Meri Agli Kitab, aapko hasi aayegi. Ya toh ab naraaz ho jayengi, aapko hasi aayegi. One of the two is going to happen or both.
15 saal lagenge nahi?
Let's see. 10 saal toh zaroor, but we'll see. It's going to be called The Tyranny of the Indian Uncle. And one of the things... I don't know, maybe you don't want me to write about the uncle. But the thing that I find fascinating... But the thing that's fascinating to me is that, you know, I asked for the book, just to start with, I asked 75 people, men and women, across Udaipur se leke Mumbai mein, Jharkhand. I went back to some of the same places where आई वॉज डूइंग द रिसर्च फॉर शाहरुख, एंड मैंने बोला कि आप मुझे ये बताएं द जेंडर यू नो सोशल ग्रुप एंड एजुकेशन लेवल ऑफ द पर्सन हु डिसाइड्स हाउ मच यू आर पेड एंड आपकी प्रमोशन एंड तरक्की. Invariably, Mukesh, essentially it is someone who is upper caste, upper class, Indian man who has gone to a certain set of institutions as well. And
don't
I
look
think,
at me.
No, I'm not. I'm not saying anything. You take this whichever you want. And you know what's fascinating to me, and I'm researching now this group of men, right? It's always the same, you know.
It's like American white male equivalent.
Yeah, exactly. There is a version of it. And I'm trying to understand it. And there is a tyranny, at least in the labor market. Because wage setting premiums, you know, for example, I'll give you an example. And this is not, it's not just about men and women, because, you know, for example, one of the sectors that I really believe is fundamentally undervalued is care work. We would not have an economy if someone was not cooking, cleaning, taking care of us, right? And yet, if you look at the wage rates that we offer domestic workers or care workers, unless it's very niche, the average wages are abysmally low. I mean, they're struggling to make minimum wage. Yeah. And I think it's an open question. Why do we think that that work is not high value, high skilled? Who is deciding what is high value and high skilled, right? And I think unless and until, to your earlier point that, you know, how do we change things? Unless that conversation is truly diverse, unless there are more men, women from different backgrounds together making important economic decisions about sectoral reform, wage reform, market reform, if we just leave it to the same elite men who have made policy forever and ever and ever, I think you're just going to get more of the same. I think thoda ye hame, I think we have to be a bit clear-sighted. Aap dekhein abhi 18% corporate boards mein we have women, right? I mean, that's so low compared to how dynamic women in the corporate sector can be and are. And I think one of the main things, I'm you know, I'm a big believer, for example, in these kinds of, you know, this affirmative action for voice. Because in a country where it has not been... Really, it does not prioritize the voices of people who've been marginalized for so long. If you don't give them a seat on the table, how will decisions be different? So I think when it comes to our economic policy, it's an open question, you know, can we bring in different voices? Can we change the nature of representation? Can we really think a little bit carefully about, you know, one of the women I follow in the book is an in-flight attendant, and she's gold. Yeah, she's my favorite. And, you know, she once said to me, and I mentioned it in the book, she says, why is it that my job of dealing with irritating customers every day doing public dealing is not worth at least some amount of the wage that a pilot is paid? A pilot, yes, he does, you know, high-skill mechanized work, he or she. But at the end of the day, I'm also doing extremely onerous people-dealing work. And I actually think now in the economy, in the world of automation, dealing with people is much harder than dealing with machines. And it's an open question, right, Mukesh? Like, hum aisa kyun nahi soch rahe hain? Why are we not rethinking our notions of value? Yeah. And I think that won't happen till we don't open up not just the question of opportunities, but who is making decisions about that. And I think that needs a lot of purposive effort. So things like, you know, getting more women parliamentarians, getting more women in decision-making roles, I think that's going to be very important.
See, on a lighter side, you know, while you may write about tyranny of Indian uncles,
Ji.
But Indian aunties bhi apne aapne bilkul, bahut powerful votes
bilkul, hai, right? bilkul. In fact, you know, to sort of link it to something technical, recently, Azim Premji University se ek report aaya, it's called The State of Working India. And I read this report every year. I think it's an excellent resource to understand what's happening in the labor market. Wahan pe ek bahut interesting statistic hai. Essentially, what they find is that whenever you have a mother-in-law who is working, you know, to a point about aunties and so on, mother-in-law, someone who's older in the family, female who has a job, suddenly you see the likelihood of the woman in the house also having a job just goes up tremendously. So that, you know, I think you're absolutely right. I think uncles and aunties, all of us, I think of myself as, you know, an auntie right now, but I feel like we all can be real triggers and levers of critical social change. And I think we just have to be very conscious of the roles. Pay your domestic worker more, you know, simple things. Have more open conversations, as you were saying, about labor conditions, the economy, opportunities. I think that's something we can do.
That even touches upon an issue which I'll not go into. I don't know whether, I mean, no one really talks about it. At some point, formalization of all those jobs, right? I mean, it's a very few places in the world where you can just hire someone on a verbal contract.
Yeah.
You know, no rights, nothing. And it doesn't matter who you are, everyone, you know, just, it's just something, you know, accepted.
Yeah.
But one day it will go away.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of time.
Yeah. And right now, most, I mean, this, in fact, the data I was telling you about, the PLFS data, it still finds more than half of our workforce works on oral contracts, especially women in urban areas. And one of the things I think we really have to think about, I don't know about formalization and informality has been so persistent, right, as a way of life almost. I don't know. But I do think some of those contracts can be better codified, certainly. And I think we, you know, we keep saying, I'm so tired, actually, I have to tell you, like, I'm so tired of people saying, Sarkar karegi ye, Sarkar. I don't think a lot of these solutions, is not about Sarkar, you know, to that wonderful, I think, Rohini Nilakani has that, right? Like the Sarkar Samaj Bazaar. This is about us. And if we don't start, you know, if you think domestic workers are not paid enough, you write a contract, right?
Yeah, all of us at our job, we expect certain number of days off.
Exactly.
Certain working hours.
Exactly.
Right? You know, we have retirement savings, you know,
exactly,
that our employer enables for us.
Yeah.
Anybody can start their home today.
Yeah.
Health insurance equivalent, you know.
Bilkul.
No one is stopping anyone.
And so there are so many schemes that you can roll people in. I mean, some work, some don't. That's a different story. But there are things that we can do. And I think, you know, looking constantly to someone else. I mean, I do think that there are larger structural questions that people have to decide on, but there are things we can do as well.
That's very powerful. As they say, all revolutions start at home.
Absolutely.
Beyond a point, complain karne se.
Bilkul.
Just so your day job is an economist.
Yes.
What does that entail? What do you do as an economist?
So when I got my job at the World Bank, I called my grandmother. She's no more and she was very close to me. And I called her and I said, okay, I'm working at the World Bank. And suddenly, after a week, I start getting calls from various people in my family. ATM. They all thought I was working for State Bank of India, right? And in their mind, bank was a functional, you know, retail bank. So I think to the point that nobody in my family still understands, I think, what I do. But let me try and explain it to you. I work largely in an area of social protection and jobs. So in the institution, there are different thematic areas that people work on. What we do largely is looking at how do we connect people to opportunities better, programs. So, for example, there'll be a project, say, with the state government of West Bengal or trying to improve women's economic outcomes. So that's something that I work on. There'll be dialogue with, say, the direct benefit transfer mission to think about how can we use innovations. What can India teach to other countries? So now I work a bit on Bangladesh as well. What can India teach Bangladesh? What can we learn about Bangladesh's experience also potentially for India? You know, things like that, or Brazil, all these different countries. So a lot of the work is, it used to be technical when I started. Now it's been 11 years that I've been in the organization. It started with a lot of research.
You do for long term.
Yes. Yeah. I'm a committed soul. Huh? Very, very traditional. I know it's unusual, I think, these days. But the thing that I end up doing now a lot is working with state governments and with central governments on welfare programs and on programs to improve access to jobs. So these kinds of questions, right? What kinds of solutions can we scale? So it's a mix of research with actual practical looking at implementation, doing a lot of haggling with bureaucrats, which I quite enjoy. And so it's a mix like that. And earlier, I think when I joined, it was a lot more number crunching, but I think that's changed. I think as you grow in the institution and.
अभी शोर से पहले आप मेरे को बता रहे थे कि आप बांग्लादेश में काम करते हो. अभी थोड़े दिन पहले I was just out of curiosity, you know, going through seeing कि Southeast Asia में क्या चल रहा है.
जी.
And I mean, we have so much talk about, you know, India being fifth largest economy, and we are going to be third largest.
Yeah.
Which I'm pretty sure will happen 2027-2028. Yeah. But the other lens is ki per capita income mein kya ho raha hai. And I was not aware, but I saw a thing. There was $1,000 gap. Bangladesh is $3,300 versus $2,300-$2,400 for India. Like, there's almost, what, 50% higher if you take India as a base.
Yeah.
Which is pretty shocking. Matlab Bangladesh ka jo image aata hai ki kafi gareeb country hai.
Nahin,
baad aati hai sare time. Har saal char in mahine and so on. But kuch to wahan pe theek ho raha hai.
So it's, I think certainly one thing jo wahan pe bahut theek ho raha hai, which we can learn a lot from. I mean, one is there is a whole story around what they've done when it comes to sanitation, nutrition, which actually many other countries have also learned from. We also have a very positive story on that side, you know, I think too, sort of, which is growing. But one thing that I think is very critical in the way Bangladesh has grown is they caught on to the export-oriented manufacturing bandwagon in a very big
textile
way. Textiles. And one of the massive things that has happened because of that is that women are much more involved in jobs in the economy, much more than, in fact, many comparator states. And you see the difference, right? So I think that's something to really learn from. Having said that, also, I mean, we should remember the denominator is very different. I mean, you know, relative to where we are.
Yeah.
And as you know, I think very well that our per capita income hides a lot of variation, right? We're looking at UP with Tamil Nadu. I mean, there's such variation there. Yeah. So I sometimes don't think, you know, sometimes I feel that India, because it has so many different regions almost within, but I do think there's a lot to learn about how women are being connected to jobs and women are being trained from at least some of the models, and how the private sector along with civil society can be a partner to government. That's a very interesting model they have there, which I know that many other states in India, Andhra Pradesh hai, I think Karnataka mein bhi hota hai, West Bengal mein bhi zarur ho raha hai. There are things that are happening.
Yeah.
But I think there's a lot to learn from our neighbors, for sure.
So your current, you know, World Bank job also takes you to different parts of the country. Do you think by now you have good pulse of, you know, the length and breadth of a country?
No, because I'm not, I can't, I, you know, ye, itna confidence mujh mein nahin hai. Matlab, I have a sense.
15 saal mein ho
jayega. Nahin, nahin, shayad kabhi nahin aayega. Because I think, you know, I'll tell you, I feel like we are such a complex context that, you know, to claim that main, mujhe samajh mein aa gaya, is basically sounding like a fool.
That's not too broad, but I mean, more an endorse as to...
Yeah, no, no, for sure. No, 100%. Right. I mean, like, for instance, I mean, the four or five states that I go to a lot, I have a better understanding of, you know, there's Rajasthan, Odisha, West Bengal, ab Karnataka mein bhi kaam ho raha hai. But I also feel somewhere, it's not false humility, it's just... I'm also not that bright, perhaps, but it takes me a little bit of time to really feel like I understand the context in which I'm operating. What I do think I know quite well across the country, just a combination of data and experiences, is what's happening to women in the economy, because it's something that I study, I follow in work and life. I'm a woman in the economy as well, so that, you know, helps. And I talk to other women in the economy. But baki, I think it still takes a little bit of time to understand.
I'm visualizing that. गांव में जाओगे वो तो मैं वर्ल्ड बैंक से हूँ और आपको शाहरुख खान पसंद है
हाँ नहीं नहीं बिल्कुल नहीं बट यू नो एक्चुअली द इंटरेस्टिंग थिंग इज अर्लियर व्हेन आई यूज्ड टू गो जब पहले मैं गांव में जा रही थी मतलब वर्ल्ड बैंक में थी नहीं मैम पहले तो मतलब ये सारा रिसर्च शुरू हुआ था बिफोर माई करियर एट द बैंक स्टार्टेड दैट वाज अ वेरी डिफरेंट टाइम अब अगर आप जाएं तो गांव की शक्ल भी तो बहुत बदल गई है आई मीन थिंग्स हैव जस्ट चेंज्ड सो मच आई मीन विद टेक्नोलॉजी विद जस्ट द वे द मार्केट्स आल्सो लोकल मार्केट्स आर ऑर्गेनाइज्ड It is very different. And I've seen that change.
I mean, kitna field work karte hai aap? Matlab saal mein kitne din you are on the bench?
So, for example, jaise West Bengal mein hamara ek project hai, then in a year, I think cumulatively at least 2 to 3 months over the, if I look at weeks that are spent, I'll be in either peri-urban or rural Bengal. And similarly, up for example, Bangladesh mein hamara kaam shuru ho raha hai, my hope is that I'll also get to start visiting there as well. So it's between 2 to 3 months, but I must confess, and I think this is the problem with these kinds of, you know, when you're in a large bureaucracy and things like that, the more you progress, the more sometimes you have to take distance from the field because you end up being, I spend, I think, a lot more time, for example, with government clients perhaps now than I do doing field work.
We use karte na, telescopic vision and microscopic vision, right?
That's right.
Dono mein balance zaruri hai.
Bilkul.
I think, like, I'm getting inspired, you know, with the, So, yeah, even a lot of us, including myself, have a lot of interest in India.
Yeah.
India has so much diversity and variation. Unless you don't do it in your own field work, not towards yourself. That academic distance understanding will be very, you know.
And aajkal, matlab, research funding is also difficult, I mean, to find in this country. And so I think for me, I just feel that each one of us probably has an opportunity to, you don't even have to go to, you know, some distant place, but even around us, documented, observe, look. Aajkal, you know, the simplest thing I always say is look up from your phone, just, you know, talk to the person next to you, say hello to a stranger. It might be you learn something.
That problem, I'm not very optimistic. We did a whole episode on minimalism, but yeah, it was the addiction level, and we were talking before also, is just, you know, so high and just continue to increase. And AI is probably...
I'm going to make it worse. I think so. So which is why I feel like for those of us who can be conscious of it, you can try and do something. But yeah, I'm a big believer in this, that I make it a point that even if my job largely requires me to be in government buildings or offices or talking to academics, I try and carve out as much time as I can to at least go out. And meri dusri kitab ka field work to thoda alag chal raha hai. That's maybe not yet gone to villages. It's still in cities right now. But I'm hoping that even with that, so I'll go back.
Same approach follow kar rahe hain uske liye?
Ji, I'm recruiting uncles who I will follow for at least some time. I want to follow men in their 50s.
But how do you recruit agar book ka naam hai? It's a
tyranny of the Indian uncle. Yeah.
उसके लिए तो why will someone self volunteer?
नहीं नहीं, because I mean I actually one of the things I'm saying is that the tyranny is not just about uncles. I mean you know it's almost in fact many of these men are living under tyrannies that they have imposed on themselves. So I see it. They're not the enemy. I think they can also be sympathetic figures. And I'm very curious about, as I told you, I'm very curious about other people's lives.
तो आपको technical question answer करना पड़ा होगा अंकल के लिए age cutoff क्या होती है?
42 to 63. It's exactly 42 to 63. Yes. Median age abhi wahi hai.
Because you are just below that age, so...
Nahin, I'm very much... I subscribe myself to be an auntie. I'm very happy in my 40s to be one and to be described as one. Fine. But I do think that, you know, to be more serious about it, I am actually very interested in following these different men through their 50s. Because the Shah Rukh book followed all these women through their 30s. Mm. And I want to do something similar for men. And I think there's a lot of change in family structures. You know, many things that many of the men thought that they could rely on, right? You can't anymore. Things have changed. Nuclear families, same kind of social support systems don't work. So I'm curious about what that looks like.
Don't say that all these things are common factor. No,
no. There will be no desperately seeking in this. Yeah. I'm only going to follow. It will only be the tyranny.
Tyranny is still...
Maybe a politician, but I'll leave it at that.
After a certain age, tyranny is a better word than desperation.
But desperately seeking, yeah, that's true. That's true.
So when does this book come out?
पता नहीं अभी दो excerpt अभी आए हैं. One is actually called The Tyranny of the Indian Uncle. There was a short piece I wrote that also came out. And abhi recently, there was another short piece called The Secondary Market that also came out.
Right.
So it'll take me some time.
What's your writing process? Like you are a disciplined writer, you sit down every day, every week and sit, right?
Haan, Mukesh, I'm one of those people. I can't sleep without writing. If I don't write every day, because the book started as diary notes. I don't first type, I write by hand. Mm. If I don't write, I can't ease up.
And every day.
It depends. Some days could even be 15-20 minutes. Mm. Some days it could be an hour. Mm. Some days it could be longer. Mm. But I know that if I don't do that, I have not closed my day. It is the way I bookend the day.
Yeah.
And it is, there's routine attached to it. And I'm one of those people, I'm sure this is true for so many of us. We interact a lot with different people. Yeah. There are a lot of things that are happening in our lives. I feel the need to document it. Mm. And then some of it becomes research. Some of it becomes just, you know, musings. That's fine. So every day, 45 minutes to a half an hour minimum can go up to an hour, hour and a half. Yeah.
Nice. Every day, unless you're editing a lot, then the book will write itself very fast.
No, but you write a lot of crap also, no? So you have to... And I think that's the other thing, which is that you then surround yourself with people who have very low tolerance to rubbish.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll tell you, nahi, ye to bakwas hai, hatao. And so you keep writing and you keep at it.
So that's a tool I need to adopt, because I also like writing.
Yeah.
I'm working on my third book now.
Yeah.
Almost done. But I think I'm hurrying into it. It seems like, you know, because... I was not writing regularly, but last year started, I write nearly every day, but I write first thing in the morning.
Ah.
And then I realized if I just show up every day, words start to add up.
Yes.
Crap wala part dekhna padega.
Ha, no, that, so this is where I believe that this is the slow part of the literature, which is the likhna to up. You can write quickly, but you take some time. But the other thing that I was going to say, though, is that what I always find really helps me with the process, since you asked, it is very important to me to clarify, material to hai and roz hum likhte hain. But the question is, kiske liye likh rahe hain? For me, it's very important to know who is the audience.
Yeah.
For this book, for Desperately Seeking, Shah Rukh Khan and my grandmother were my audience.
Shah Rukh Khan was your audience?
Yes. In my head, I thought, I'll tell you that in a second.
Has he read this book?
It's in his house, yes. Okay. I met him. He wrote a very nice note. Parts of it are in the... Book mein? It's in the acknowledgements.
Oh, I'm okay. All right.
And there's a preface there in the paperback. He said he thanked me for putting him to good use. He's a wonderful, wonderful man. And he's so generous. And but I wrote with him in mind and my grandmother. Because, you know, I wanted it to, you know, to that point that I didn't want to write the book for economists. But I wanted it to be written for people who would be interested in these issues, but may not be technical. Mm-hmm. And so in my mind, I had these two people as my... my
grandmother edited it?
She passed away before the book came out. Sorry. But I think she knows wherever she is. And but you know, the thing that she said to me, which has stayed with me forever, you know, we're from Bengali family, and she's always telling me, why is it all these Bengalis who are economists, because so many Bengalis become economists, why is it that they write in this language that we can't understand? You know, they're writing about us, but hame samajh bhi nahi aati. And I remember just that stayed with me, and she really introduced me to literature.
You have a Bengali guy who writes, you know, such a great prose, Abhijit Banerjee.
That's right. That's true. That's true. He's my, him and genres, I think, to me are some of the most stellar writing in economics in simple, beautiful language, is the two of them. And I wanted to write in a way that, you know, would be much more accessible. Because ladkiyon ko mein, also in particular, I feel that women are taught to be scared of numbers. It's changing a lot. There are a lot more women in STEM, but we still have a culture where, you know, numbers, economics, finance, people get a bit afraid. And I wanted, you know, if I can use Shah Rukh Khan to get you into a conversation about the Indian economy.
Yeah.
Wonderful. And that's what I wanted to do.
I think book really captures the, you know, spirit of, you know, a lot of this Indian women across generations. And you've seen them also go through this development. I think what has stayed with me, I think, you know, the example that you shared with these girls, they themselves want to be Shah Rukh now, instead of, you know, wanting to marry Shah Rukh.
Yes.
That is very encouraging, you know, positive change.
Yes.
I think the work you do at World Bank is also very important. I think World Bank also has been part of India development through thick and thin.
Yes.
And been part of so many ups and downs, you know, throughout last, pretty much since independence. So I think, and you have been like long, steady stint there and, you know, spreading your work, you know, beyond India, neighboring countries as well. I think you yourself are, you know, incredible role model for young women in India. Like, you are independent. You're obviously, you know, very well informed. You don't shy away from, you know, expressing your opinions.
No.
Right? You write really well and you're doing like really important work as an economist. It's a privilege to talk to you. Like, thanks for taking your time and being on the show.
It was a complete privilege of mine. And thank you so much for spending this time and all your wonderful questions. I learned a lot talking to you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
At Sparks, we aim to bring to you stories of exponential impact. We share in-depth analysis of what goes behind success stories. If you find our conversations interesting, you can join us by subscribing to our YouTube channel. You can also listen to Sparks on Spotify, Apple Podcast, or any other audio platform of your choice. If you have any suggestions on who we should invite or what topics we need to cover, just let us know in the comments. We are always listening, looking for ways to improve, and keep getting better as we go along.